You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Happy Tuesday. Once again, it is the Out of Sight podcast on the Liberty Ballers Network, a series of Vox Media podcasts on the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network. I am your host, Adil Royster, and had that nice palate cleanser last week. Not talking about Ben Simmons anymore. I'm done. We're done with that on this podcast. We're moving on. We're talking about next season, this upcoming season. It's going to be fun. There are going to be some questions. There are going to be some answers, hopefully sooner rather than later. There are also a lot of things to look forward to. And we're going to talk about that with our old buddy, Tom West, who is, of course, you know, he's the one that brings the class to my podcast, and I appreciate him so much for that. Tom, how you doing?
I'm not sure I can always live up to that, but thanks for having me back on.
you do well every time. See, you say that every podcast that we do together, and it always turns out that the class-o-meter, it just goes off the charts when you're here, as opposed to if I have, you know, no disrespect to him, but, you know, Steve or Dan or anybody like that, like the class meter just goes up when you're on the podcast. I'm just saying.
Well, I appreciate it.
So I want to talk about the two player profiles that you did. One was Isaiah Joe, one was Tyrese Maxey. But first, I wanted to get your thoughts about a couple of things that Shams tweeted last night. I don't know if you're aware of some of these, but we'll just run through them real quick. So the first thing, the G League will apparently have its first Latin American team this upcoming season. It's going to be in Mexico City, the Mexico City Capitans. Unfortunately, all of their games will be played in the U.S. due to COVID-19 restrictions on international travel. Initial thoughts of that for me is like, sounds cool. They play a couple of regular season NBA games in Mexico, and it seems like there's some interest, but I don't know. It's like, according to data from last year, only 2.2% of the NBA player population was Latinx. So I'm kind of wondering what the thought process was, like using Mexico as kind of a bridge between all of Latin America. Like, I don't know.
I mean, I guess if the aim for them there is just to try and expand the game a little bit, and eventually, once COVID is not such an issue, maybe, you know, once they can get games there, that would be cool, you know, tap into another fan base maybe. As someone obviously like being in England, you know, I've enjoyed watching the NBA games in London and NFL games in London and that kind of thing. Like, when the sport comes to you, that is exciting. So if they want to tap into another fan base when they can, you know, physically, once COVID's not a problem, then I guess that's cool for them to try.
Right, because they had that
this year, but yeah.
Right, because they had that Sixers-Celtics game, preseason game in London. It was Sixers-Mavericks or something like that.
Yeah, Sixers-Celtics. Yeah, I was at that one. That was cool, yeah. My only Sixers game in person that I've been to.
well, we need these COVID restrictions to, like, well, actually, we need people to get vaccinated, and then we need these restrictions to go away so that you can come to Wells Fargo Center and enjoy Sixers games with us. The next thing that Shams tweeted, the NBA Board of Governors will vote this month to approve the coaches challenge being the lone method to review out of bounds calls with under 2 minutes left. So those long out of bounds plays that are being reviewed, that's going to be coaches, not officials. So maybe speed up the fourth quarters a little bit.
If we can speed things up at all, then I'm happy with that. As long as calls are accurate, I think if you can cut down reviewing time, I think most people would be on board with that. I'd not actually seen all the logistics of that report yet. So that's new to me. I was kind of off Twitter last night. But if we can speed things up at all, then yeah, I'm all for that. Like when you do get stuck in long reviews in the fourth quarter, it does sort of drag out the suspense of the actual game a bit.
Is it really that big of an issue? I never thought it was that big of an issue, to be perfectly honest.
I don't think it's too bad. It's just if you get caught. I mean, sometimes if you get a review for a few minutes, you know, add right. on a timeout, you know, there's a better stoppage. I guess if you can reduce that, then, you know, it helps to speed things up. But I mean, I don't mind too much either way, but if you can speed things up a little bit, then I'm fine with that.
Yeah, it's not like it's baseball, the most boring sport in the entire country, but, you know, whatever. And then this is the one that I'm really excited about. The NBA is discussing having an in-season tournament in future seasons with $1 million per player in prize money. I am totally down on this. More in-season tournaments are awesome. They had an in-season tournament in the WNBA, the Commissioner's Cup, and I watched every freaking game, and it was amazing. I think the NBA should really take a hard look at this.
Yes, yeah, it's an interesting one. I think it doesn't excite me loads, but I mean, I guess, you know, once you kind of get to the midpoint of the season and things start becoming a bit more of like a trek, I get right. the intrigue in trying to sort of shake things up and add a different dynamic, add a bit of excitement. I think if, because isn't the prize money supposedly going to be $1 million per player?
Yes.
My only thought would be, I don't know how much of a motivating fact that is for like the sort of top players to like care that much about the tournament. Obviously for younger guys, it's huge. It's, you know, it's really good for, you know, rookies or maybe guys who are on non-guaranteed deals or just, you know, trying to sort of keep their place in the league. Then it's exciting for them. I guess it's a bit less interesting for the kind of top guys and anyone on longer term contracts and stuff, but it could be interesting. I don't know. Yeah. We'll see how it works out, but yeah, I kind of see the pros and cons for it either way.
Perfect segue talking about younger guys. So let's start with the first of two player profiles that you did last week, and the first is a player that I'm really excited about, and that's Isaiah Joe. I thought that in the offseason, I honestly thought that Isaiah Joe was going to get more of a run because I wasn't sure if Furkan Korkmaz was going to get re-signed at a deal that actually worked under the salary cap. But it just so happened that they were able to re-sign him. And so now you have Korkmaz and Isaiah Joe on this roster. So we got a couple fireballers coming off the bench. How do you see Isaiah Joe's season shaking out? Like, is there still going to be minutes for him? Because he played very, very little minutes in 2020, 2021. And with Furkan being the guy that is first off the bench when it comes to, yeah, we need some shooters out there.
Yeah, it's tricky. And I think especially because, I mean, it's so hard to know exactly what the Sixers are going to look like next season while we're still waiting for this Ben Simmons trade. So we're not going to dive into that right now, but it's hard to know what the rotation could look like. And, you know, because let's say they trade Simmons for kind of a bunch of picks and maybe a few role players, like those could be more wings and guards potentially, in which case it becomes even more tricky for Joe to maybe kind of break into the rotation consistently. But I think as of right now, he's kind of in a similar spot because obviously Danny Green was re-signed, Furkan staying. But I do think if he can at least be given the chance at a few more minutes, I think he'll be able to contribute and kind of make the most of his minutes if he can get on the floor. And I think he can at least kind of compete with Korkmaz a little bit in terms of at least kind of catching the interest of the coaching staff, just because I do think Joe kind of showed quite a lot of good stuff as a rookie when he did play. I think his defense is further along than the team probably expected. And I do think he has some kind of upside that, you know, at least defensively could kind of take him over Korkmaz at that end of the floor. So I think there's some upside there for him. But yeah, like you said, it is going to be tricky for him to kind of crack the rotation.
I was just going to say, in bigger games, do you prefer more, because we know that Korkmaz has some he has some deficiencies on defense. And if you're saying that Isaiah Joe's defense is maybe a little bit further along than people expect, are we going to see situations where Joe might be the guy that gets those minutes over Furkan because of the quote unquote better defense?
I don't think yet. I don't think soon, just because I think, you know, Doc Rivers in particular, he does favor his veterans. I think he likes what Portland brings. He was kind of talking him up, you know, all season as a kind of high energy kind of offensive punch guy who can come in and give you some shooting, give you a little bit of scoring. And I think just with Cormaz's experience and obviously what he did last season, you know, he had a strong year after kind of shooting a little bit cold just to open the season. I think you kind of favour that, you know, that experience. And, you know, Cormaz has improved defensively as well. Obviously, like you said, he has his limitations there, but, you know, he has kind of improved his foot speed a little bit, just his positioning, kind of his stance and being a bit more disruptive in passing lanes. Like he has gradually made some improvements at that end of the floor. So he's not like, and he's obviously 6'7", like, you know, and he has a decent wingspan. So he's not a complete massive liability, you know, right, like a 6 foot point guard who can't really move. So he's not, you know, a major flaw at that end, but I do think, you know, further down the line, maybe that's maybe later in the season or whatever, or maybe the wing rotation gets a little shorter in a trade or whatever could happen, you know, an injury. I do think Joe can kind of step up and deliver if he gets a chance to play a little bit more. And I do think there's absolutely upside there for him to kind of be a better or similar option to Cormaz. And I think defensively, he kind of can get the edge quite easily for me. Like it wasn't long ago, like last season, there was a point where Joe was kind of playing mostly through January where he was kind of getting those extra minutes.
Yeah.
And the Sixers were kind of really shorthanded. You know, there were some injuries. There was some, obviously, the health and safety protocols with COVID were really hitting them hard, and they kind of had a lot of games where they were had a really short rotation and Joe kind of got extra minutes. Like it was a discussion among fans, like, should he just overtake Cormaz? And obviously that was maybe, you know, a little premature, but I think defensively, you know, he has a lot to like he's pretty quick on the ball. Joe is, you know, he competes quite well, even though he's got a pretty skinny build, like his decent length. And then I think off ball, his rotations and kind of just awareness and positioning of where to be was really quite sharp, and he kind of knows what to do, and like he has some good kind of rotations helping around the rim and just moves well off the ball. And I think that, I mean, that's something that Doc Rivers was quite impressed by last year, and he mentioned a few times, you know, when Joe did get more extended minutes, that he kind of stood out at the defensive end of the floor. So I do think the kind of coaching staff like what they see there, and I think if for whatever reason Joe has a few games where he gets to play a bit more, you know, non-garbage time, I think he can, yeah, he can kind of make a real case for competing at the bottom of the rotation. It's just whether, yeah, if the Sixers bring in any new guys on the wing or anything like that, it will be tricky for him to kind of consistently get the minutes. But if he can in any way, I do think he's kind of, he can be ready to help.
Yeah. That was my fault last January. I was spearheading that whole campaign to give Joe more minutes than Cormaz. That's my fault. I put so many bets down that I'm just throwing bets out there and just seeing which one sticks. But these five games in January, from January 9th to the 16th, when, like you said, they were really shorthanded, this is one thing that the Sixers, I can see why they wanted this guy, because in those five games where he had more than 15 minutes, he was chucking threes. It was just like, oh, okay, all right, Isaiah, you're just going to take one dribble and shoot. Okay, all right, man. There was one game where he took 11 attempts, one he had 10. And when you're talking about his volume, he fires without hesitation. I'm quoting your piece. He fires without hesitation, has a range a couple of feet beyond the arc, relocates well off the ball, and shoots comfortably off movement. He's got almost 37% free three-point percentage, but the 10 attempts per 36 minutes. Holy Lord. And let's be honest, they're not all like bad attempts either. For the most part, they're actually really good looks.
Yeah, I think. And also there is value in someone who doesn't just take the kind of easy, clear, wide open looks. Like that was something that, you know, Seth Curry needed to kind of work on last year. And obviously he dealt with COVID, which was, you know, an issue for him, but that was the kind of area where he needed to improve. Like, he's obviously an elite 3-point shooter, but he just needed to kind of let them fly more. And that's obviously something that Korkmaz does. And that's what Danny Green does. Like, some of the new Sixers last year were so helpful because they would just let it fly. And Isaiah Joe, like, fits that mold perfectly. Like, he's just not afraid whatsoever. Like, as soon as he got on the floor as a rookie, like, he was just happy to shoot. And, you know, like I said in the piece, like, he can come off movement, he'll come off screens. Like, he can sort of provide some more higher difficulty shots. And you want guys who can pull defenders out and make them worry about you when you are, you know, contested or coming off a screen, or, you know, those sort of situations where they have to step up and respect your shot, and they can't just, you know, ignore you at the perimeter because they think, oh, he needs a couple of seconds to get his feet set and, right, and, you know, settle down before taking the shot. So that really does help. And I think, you know, his efficiency was, you know, fine as rookie. Obviously, it's a very small sample of attempts. But yeah, like you mentioned as well, like, it's just that volume, like 10 attempts per 36 minutes is really, like, promising sign for him. So yeah, you can guarantee that he's going to come in and let it fly. He has a good sort of shooting skill set with, you know, off movement and maybe the odd one off the bounce, or, you know, staring his defender down if there's a few seconds left on the shot clock and that kind of thing. So yeah, I think that plus his defense definitely gives him the right kind of skill set to just kind of step into a kind of low maintenance role and be, you know, be a plus, you know, maybe not right away in the season, but maybe later on, if he can find some way to get minutes, I do think he can help. And I definitely think, you know, beyond just this season, if it is hard for him to kind of consistently crack the rotation, I definitely really like his upside as just a sort of very easy to fit in two-way role player.
Everybody was paying attention to Tyrese Maxey and Jaden Springer and Paul Reed in summer league, and Isaiah Joe quietly had a really damn good summer league.
Yeah, it was good. And I think his passing as well was what stood out to me. Like, obviously it's a very different setting, you know, summer league, competition levels off, like, you know, teams aren't prepared defensively, like, it's entirely different. But yeah, just his confidence and some of the sort of passing craft he was showing off was good. And, like, you know, I put one clip in the piece where he just hit a behind the back pocket pass in a pick and roll and just stuff like that, like, just getting creative. And, like, he has been a good passer. Like, he showed some interesting passing and stuff in college. And, you know, we didn't see it too much in the NBA just because there weren't the opportunities there, but he can pass. Like, he can be a sort of complimentary guy, you know, as a wing guy. He's obviously not going to be running loads of pick and rolls for the Sixers, but he can do a little bit of playmaking, you know, in certain situations, in attack and closeouts and things. So I think him showing a bit of that in summer league, yeah, was encouraging along with everything else he can do.
We'll get into your next player profile in a second. Is the one guy that we all have questions about, we all have high hopes for, but, you know, there's some things with Tyrese Maxey that we need to talk about. But gonna take a quick break and then we'll come right back and we'll discuss our boy, Mr. Tyrese Maxey.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, so we outlined Isaiah Joe for the upcoming season. Now we get to the main event, because I feel like this is the one where people are really looking forward to for one reason or another. If you are one of the people that are get Ben Simmons out of town, then this is the guy that is most likely going to take his minutes in the starting rotation. At least that's the thought process, I guess. Where do you stand on that? If Simmons is, well, it's not if anymore, it's when Simmons is traded, and assuming that Maxey is not part of the deal, does Maxey crack the starting rotation?
I think if we see a Simmons trade where, you know, like I mentioned, the possibility they trade him for, you know, kind of a bunch of picks and maybe some role players rather than that star guard, just because that star player doesn't seem to be available right now. I think that if that is the way they go and they don't land a new kind of starting level point guard that they want to go with, then I do think Maxey can kind of step into that role. They might need him to.
Right. I think the Shake Milton idea, I think we're past that now.
I think I'd be very comfortable going with Maxey over Shake. I mean, I think for a lot of last season, Maxey was just better than
just
Shake.
Better,
after,
yeah.
You know, yeah, just after the, I mean, after the sort of first stretch of the season where Shake was playing really well, which now seems like a really long time ago. I just think Maxey was better, and I just think his upside to grow with more reps and more playing time and just continue to grow in confidence. And, you know, for instance, like I mentioned in my article, like one of the main things with Maxey is him just kind of adding that pull up three and, you know, growing more comfortable with his jump shot and
yes,
and using that more, and that gives him kind of the counter he doesn't necessarily have right now, which is to be able to punish defenders when they do go under screens against him, to kind of cut off his driving lanes and his chances to get to floaters if he can consistently hit those pull up jumpers and kind of stretch the floor more from three, which he did really well in summer league. He fired loads of shots off the dribble in those two games he played, you know, step backs and pulling up off screens. Like if he can do more of that, that's kind of the main weapon he's missing. So I think, yeah, just his current ability. And then, yeah, the fact that I can see him growing with more time, more experience, and more confidence. I think, yeah, I just think the upside for him to be a high level contributor over Shake is really exciting for the Sixers. And yeah, I definitely think he could kind of step into that role, and there might be some bumps along the way. I think, you know, his playmaking, expecting him to be the kind of lead playmaker is a bit more of a challenge. And I think if they can kind of pair him with someone in the backcourt who can help a little bit, you know, maybe that's someone they get in return for Simmons in the trade, that would be helpful. But I think Maxey stepping into that role would be, yeah, I think he could be good for the team. And I think that would be great for his development.
And I hear the main argument against this. It goes back to Markelle Fultz. And this is kind of what the thought process is. Like, do you put Fultz / Maxey in a position where he's on this team where they have a window and they are trying to win right now? And it's like, can you deal with this kid's ebbs and flows while trying to compete for a championship? I think the Sixers can do that, just simply because I think because Joel Embiid is in his prime where he is and how so much focus is on him, that I think that Maxey is able to kind of do his thing in a way that Fultz couldn't, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think it would be preferable to keep Maxey in kind of a higher minute bench role rather than throwing him straight into the starting lineup.
If that I agree.
Is how the team construct would work. I think that would just be, yeah, just easier on his development. I think you don't want to necessarily throw him straight into a starting role unless you have to. I think that would be better or not. Like I mentioned, I do think the playmaking, while he showed improvement, and there's definitely some bright moments there, you know, last season, I think throwing him into that kind of lead playmaker role, depending on who else is with him on the court, is kind of challenging. But yeah, like you mentioned, you know, I think the difference with Fultz is obviously, you know, Maxey, while his three-pointer is still the main thing he needs to work on, like he's obviously much further along in that regard than Fultz was.
Right.
And also in this new setting that we're talking about, where he's potentially starting, like Simmons isn't going to be there. So you're not having the issue of your other sort of main ball handler not being able to space the four whatsoever. Like Maxey's going to be playing next to another guard who can shoot or can at least do more to space the floor than Simmons. So it is a more spacious kind of construct that you'd be working with. So that does make things easier. I just think, yeah, the playmaking would be the main thing where ideally you'd have a bit of extra help. And also, you know, who would be starting at the two? You know, would Seth Curry still be out there? You know, that's a very small backcourt defensively. You know, I like what Maxi can do defensively at the point of attack. Like, he's quick, you know, he's got really good motor. He kind of improved at that end of the floor after having some struggles earlier in the season. Just kind of, you know, he mentioned later on in the year how he kind of better understood how to, you know, work on his coverages and knowing where to be, you know, after having to kind of learn on the fly, you know, earlier on in the season, what with having, you know, a shortened training camp, no summer league and that kind of thing. Like, he had to learn a lot very fast, you know, with the condensed schedule. But yeah, that's obviously another issue. Maybe the Sixers will be getting someone back and then you can move in the Simmons trade, and then you could move Curry to the bench, maybe. You know, there's so many different things to consider that we just don't know, because we don't know what the Simmons trade is going to look like. But I definitely, you know, I'm interested by Maxi's upside to kind of step into a starting role if that does have to happen, depending on, you know, how the team shakes out.
If there's one thing that doesn't make me worry about Maxi in the starting rotation, is the fact that I know that he enjoys working on his craft and kind of asking questions and picking brains and stuff like that. Like, he wants to get better. You mentioned in your article that he was spend a lot of time talking to Matisse Thybulle about defense. So I think if there are deficiencies in his game in the starting rotation, like, he's not just gonna sit idly by and just like not do anything. Like, he's going to try to work and get better, and that just speaks to his motor and his wanting to have a higher basketball IQ.
Yeah, no, he works like crazy. Like, everyone, you know, you talk to on the team, you know, when you ask players or Doc Rivers about him, like, they always mention how hard Maxi works and, yeah, how willing he is to learn, like, how, you know, he'll ask guys for, you know, any kind of advice he can. You know, even George Hill, when he was on the team, like, everyone Maxi would speak to. And, you know, Doc Rivers mentioned a couple of times, like, late in the season that, you know, Maxi is, like, the hardest worker on the team. Like, no one puts in more time on the practice court, you know, individually than he does. And it was kind of hard to get him to take a few days off after the season because he wanted to get straight back to the gym. And, like, one of the development coaches had to be like, you know, are you coming in at the end of the week? They were like, don't, you know, take more time off. And Maxi was like, I'm going to be there, sort of thing.
He's either going to be on the practice court or he's going to be on the basketball court in South Philly somewhere. So one or the other, I would prefer he does it in a controlled environment, but, you know.
He'll be somewhere working, yeah. yeah, so you can always count that development. I do think, you know, it was just impressive how much he developed, you know, last year as a rookie. Like, I mentioned the defense and kind of honing up there a little bit, but also just, you know, his playmaking got a little bit better over the last couple of months of the regular season. You know, he got a bit more comfortable with his three-pointer, using a couple more pull-up jumpers from mid-range. You know, he drove to the rim, you know, drove all the way to the rim more, which is something he hadn't done as much early in the season. You know, he was kind of using that floater a bit too much. And effective as it is, you know, you do want to get to the rim as well. He barely got to the free throw line early on, but he kind of doubled his attempts after the All-Star break, which was good as well. So he did make a bunch of improvements already as a rookie, which is really impressive. And you don't often see that too much, you know, those developments mid-season. I think if you know, now he's had a full proper off-season under his belt. I do think the potential for him to grow a lot next season is right there. Like, I'm sure he will be noticeably better next year. It's just, yeah, what role he's in. And, you know, like we said, I think it would be good if you could kind of not throw him straight into the starting lineup, if you can keep him in kind of plenty of minutes off the bench, rather than putting too much kind of pressure on him and, you know, asking too much of him as a playmaker, because he can make some good reads. You know, he had some nice skip passes last year and things, but he's not a super high-level playmaker who's going to be, you know, really breaking teams down and kind of picking them apart from all over the place with his passing, at least not at the moment. So, yeah, depending on, you know, what the team looks like, we'll see what role he gets. But he's going to be better whatever role he's in. So, you know, however the Sixers offense and their lineup shakes out, like, Maxi is going to improve, I'm sure. So that is one thing they can feel good about.
And like we were saying before, when we were talking about Isaiah Joe, Tyrese Maxey also had a pretty decent summer league, and we kind of saw his improvements and more willingness to take threes. He only played in two games because he only played in two games of summer league, but he still put up 14 attempts in those two games. And sure, he went 1 of 8 in one of those games, but at the same time, it's refreshing to see him just kind of take those shots and just be willing to chuck from deep if he has even just a slightly good look.
Yeah, it's encouraging. And, you know, obviously the efficiency coming as well as the next step, but just him getting that confident is, you know, a really promising sign. Like I mentioned, he did look a little bit more comfortable, you know, later last season. And the fact that he came into summer league and was just like firing away again, you know, it's just summer league. Like we mentioned with Isaiah Joe, obviously it's a completely different setting. Like you don't put too much into it, you know, when you're kind of analysing what players can do. But if they show, you know, a bit of development with a certain part of their game, or, you know, more confidence in one area, or if there's something sort of tangible rather than just getting really hot and, you know, scoring a bunch of points, you know, without doing anything necessarily different in their process, then, you know, it's at least promising to see. So, yeah, I think Maxi kind of looking that comfortable and, yeah, taking some kind of difficult shots off the dribble from three, like he had, a, you know, a really nice step back on the left wing in one game, like he was taking some off high screens and that sort of thing. So, yeah, just seeing him kind of taking those shots was looked like a step forward. And I think if he can be doing a bit of that next year, that would be really useful for him, just kind of better rounding out his offensive game.
A lot of promise with both of the gentlemen that we talked about. And you know what? I feel really good no matter who is in the starting lineup, whoever is in the rotation. I feel good about this team. I still feel good about this team. I get it. Simmons has to be moved for the entire for the ceiling to be reached a little bit, because I still feel like there's some lingering resentment, and you don't really need that in the locker room or around the organization. I think they just need to rip the band-aid off. And at this point, it sucks that we're having to maybe look at like a 40 cents on the dollar trade, but that might just be what it has to be at this point.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, Morey's not gonna make a bad trade. Like, I don't think Daryl Morey's gonna do anything.
Right.
Like, he's not just gonna send him away for like a second round pick and a point guard. Like,
no.
You know, I think some fans would take him, you know, take anything. But yeah, I'm sure there'll still be a decent return. It's just if they're trading him soon, which I think they will. I don't think anything's gonna happen before training camp. But I'd have thought, you know, after that, or, you know, I'm not sure I can see him playing another game for the Sixers. So I'm sure something will happen soon. But I do think, just like I mentioned earlier, I just think we've shifted now from them being really set on getting a star in return, that there's just not going to be anyone like that available right now. And they are going to have to kind of settle for more of a move where they maybe get a bunch of draft picks and, you know, some young guys in return, or a couple of role players, and they kind of just restock their assets, you know, with more picks and that kind of thing. And then they are better positioned to maybe make a move further down in the season. You know, if someone, you know, Bradley Beal, Damian Lillard, Zach LaVine, I don't know, you know, anyone kind of like that, that, you know, we have connected to them and, you know, that they'd obviously be interested in. If someone like that does become available, the Sixers would then be in a better position, and they won't have spent, you know, months kind of trying to make things work with Simmons when he doesn't want to be there, the team wants to move. And you know, it's just it's a really sort of difficult, messy situation. So we'll see how it shakes out. I just think, yeah, the deal is going to look obviously probably quite different to what fans were kind of hoping for, you know, a couple of months ago.
Always class, always positivity talking to you, Tom. I don't do a podcast without asking you what the current sitch is across the pond, and how are things going as far as like your coronavirus handlings, and what's the scope over there these days? Because I actually haven't talked to you about it in a while.
Yeah, no, we're doing okay. Like, the vaccine rollout has been going well. I think, you know, most adults have had, you know, both their jabs by now. I've had both of my jabs, which I'm really pleased about. So I've had my second one for about a few weeks now, so that's really good. And yeah, life does feel a lot more normal now. It's been weird to get used to, but yeah, like, you can go most places, like most things are open. You know, we don't have social distancing rules in place. Obviously, myself and, you know, other people who take things seriously still respect distancing, but it's not like a law now. There are just more things open that weren't before. Obviously, you know, we're still wearing masks. It's not law that you have to wear them now, but a fair amount of people still are, which is good. You know, I always have mine on in any public space, but it's good to see most people still have them. Obviously, some people have kind of sacked it off, which is unfortunate, but at least quite a few people are. I think now it looks like, you know, the next step is kind of maybe booster jabs being rolled out later in this year to top people up for the winter. That'll be the main thing, just seeing how we get on in the winter, how cases change, you know, now that schools have gone back, because they just started the new school year a week or so ago.
Oh yeah, I was gonna ask you about that.
Yeah, are
there vaccine mandates for schools or mask mandates, anything like that, for like teachers, faculty, staff, students, whatever? Because I know they don't have anything that is approved, at least here anyway, for kids 12 and under.
Yeah, we've not had the kind of vaccine rollout for kids yet. But yeah, schools have kind of been operating like normal for a while now. Again, I get, you know, the government's thinking being that, you know, it doesn't kind of impact that age group as much. So, you know, we'll see how things go. Like schools returning after holidays and things has like risen cases before. I think at the moment it's okay, but, you know, obviously they've only kind of just gone back. So hopefully that still remains the case. But yeah, we'll see how that goes. But yeah, right now things are doing fairly well, I believe. So that's good. how about over where you are?
Over here, it's really dependent on what state you live in. If you live in the South, it's really dire down there. Florida and Texas are really bad. Other states in the South, like Alabama, Mississippi, also really bad. There was a report, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, where the main hospital that is managed by the University of Mississippi, like they had to use a parking garage as like a makeshift kind of COVID ICU kind of thing.
Oh wow.
Because the overflow is just so much. And that's kind of where some states in the South are. In the northern states, it's not great, but it's not that bad. So it's so we're kind of in that like gray area of, okay, it's not 100% great, but Jesus Christ, it's not that.
I mean, hopefully it's better everywhere soon, but yeah.
It's rough if you live south of the Mason-Dixon. Well, that's good that everything seems to be going pretty well over there. I haven't talked to you in a while about that. And it's always nice to hear that you and the fam and everybody over there are doing okay-ish. But hopefully things continue to trend upwards. And speaking of trending upwards, yeah, Sixers basketball will be back in roughly a month and a half. So here we go. Here we go again.
Yeah, here we go. I mean, I'm just ready. I mentioned this with our mate Sean the other day as well on his podcast. Like, I'm just ready for this Simmons trade to happen and we can just move on.
Yeah.
Just focus about basketball. Like, we don't need to be dealing with trade drama and all these, you know, various rumors. Like, we can just focus on a basketball team, just talk about the players, how everything fits, and just follow things like normal. So I'm looking forward to getting to that point soon, hopefully.
Next weekend, a week from Saturday, is the big Philly tailgate for SB Nation. So Liberty Ballers will be in attendance, Bleeding Green Nation will be in attendance, Broad Street Bullies also be in attendance, and the Good Fight also in attendance. So hopefully maybe we can FaceTime you in so that you can just like kind of see what's going on.
Sounds good.
Tom West, you can follow him on Twitter at TomWestNBA. Always a pleasure talking to you. And yeah, always love it. See the classometer just keeps, it's just up. And now that the conversation is over, it's just trending downwards. And I'm a little bit sad about it, but that's okay.
I did what I could. Thanks for having me on, man.
I'll talk to you soon, Tom.
Support for this show comes from Fundrise. Buy low, sell high. It's easy to say, hard to do. For example, high interest rates are crushing the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices are falling, even for many of the best assets. It's no wonder the Fundrise Flagship Fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its billion-dollar real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise Flagship Fund to your portfolio in just minutes, and with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/fox. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise Flagship Fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.